I'll wait for you to get done crinkling your paper over there.
How does that sound?
Are you quite done?
Is it? Are you quite done? Yes, I suppose so.
Okay. Madison, edit this out.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Threat Level Podcast, the podcast where we talk about The Office. I'm Jamie.
And I'm Madison. And it's just the two of us today.
Oh, just the two
Everyone
of us.
Everyone else is a slacker.
Yes, slackers and...
Slash doesn't have internet.
Or is it sick.
Or is sick.
But hey, you know, I'd like to say, I clearly am also sick, but I am here.
That is true. You are here.
So please excuse my extremely hoarse voice. Maybe it'll help with someone's ASMR. I'm not sure.
By the end of this episode, you may no longer have any voice at all.
Maybe not. It was tough already doing 4 hours of classes. I was like, ooh, goodbye voice.
Yeah. Well, if it comes down to just me talking, we might have to just call it quits.
Just me talking. No, I shall talk through the rest of the episode, at least.
You can type your thoughts to me, and I'll just do both sides of the conversation.
There you go. Sounds good. Speaking of conversations, all right. Do you have a question for us?
I do have a question for us. Well, just for the two of us.
Yes.
My question is, have you ever had one of those weird, like, recurring dreams that's either just bad or very strange and disturbing? And what was that dream about?
A recurring dream about something.
Like, yeah, like a dream that you've had multiple times, like possibly like one night after another for like a period of time that was like the same dream that was either like, I mean, you could, if you have one that was good, you can say that. But I feel like these dreams are normally either very bad right. or just very
like weird. Apocalyptic and stuff.
Yeah.
I think that the only recurring dream that I feel like I remember ever having as a kid, and I don't remember a lot of my dreams nowadays, but... it was something like I would be on a roller coaster or something, and I remember like really wanting to live the excitement of the roller coaster, and then I think every single time I would end up waking up, and it just so happened that I was able to fall back asleep again and like go directly back into the dream.
Oh, okay,
and like,
yeah.
Does that happen too often? Where like,
have had it happen before.
Yeah. And I've done that for, like, a ton of different dreams, and somehow it just happens to work. It's, like, the weirdest.
Maybe you just dreamed that you woke up.
Oh, my goodness. Maybe.
Whoa.
I mean, I feel like it almost seems like that idea of being able to control your dreams. Lucid dreaming, I think it's called.
Lucid dream, yeah.
Yeah. Have you... But I don't think I've ever, like... I guess maybe I've been like, I'm going to turn right here. And so I do. So I'm like somewhat controlling it. But I feel like I've never been in a dream and I've felt like completely in control of all of the elements. As like, what about, have you?
Well, that brings us to my answer.
Okay.
And this is something that's been happening to me recently within like since moving to Elmira. I think is the first time I noted this happening, is that like I'll wake up in the morning, like at my normal time at like 7:30, and I won't get up immediately. I'll kind of like fall back asleep.
Yeah.
And then I'll start, like I'll know I'm asleep.
Okay.
But like I'm not really in control of it at all. But and I'll dream that I've woken up. and like I'll wake up in the dream and I'll get out of bed and I'll walk out into the rest of the apartment and something will be off, like not quite the way that it is, so then I'll realize, oh, I'm not still awake yet. Jeez. So like I'm, this is okay. Still this part of the dream, I need to wake up for real. And then, yeah. like, I'll go through this cycle of thinking that I've woken up, like, 5 or 6 times before I actually wake up. Wow. And by that point, I'm so, like, disoriented. And it's, like, such a trippy experience to, like, yeah. think that you're awake multiple times. Like, literally, this just happened to me this morning again. It happens really frequently. That's and, like, so one of the weird. Things, like, even in the dream, I'll be like, okay. I'm sleeping. I'm going to count backwards from 3. When I get to 1, I'm going to wake up. And then I'll wake up in the dream again. And I woke up, quote unquote, in the dream this morning. And I went out into my apartment and all of the furniture was gone. It was just like no couches, no chairs. And I was like, okay. This clearly is weird. And, like, it didn't even, yeah. like, click to me, like, that I was asleep at that point still. Because sure. I was like, I should just go put some clothes on so I can deal with this. And then I'm like, no, I'm probably still asleep. And then, like, it's such a, like, a trippy thing that, like, by the time I wake up, I'm, like, exhausted from just trying to wake up.
Right. Jeez, I was going to say, so things feel off, but you've never, like, gone out and it always seems like somewhat realistic though, right?
So you've right, not, yeah.
You've not like encountered a monster or anything.
No. It'll just be like the wrong colored walls or gotcha. Like something that's not like I know that's not how it was when I went to bed the previous night kind of thing. Okay. Like something like this little things that are off enough. It's weird.
Yeah. This does remind me of this happens to me a lot and your story reminded me of it, is that in the mornings, so usually I set like 62 alarms because I'm like, I will not possibly get up. And you remember probably living through that.
Oh, but I do.
You will never forget all the scars.
I'll never forget Backstabber by Amanda Palmer.
Right.
The little 30-second clip of that playing yeah. 50 times in the morning before I came in and killed you.
Before you stabbed me in the back.
Yeah, exactly.
So that reminds me that, like, I don't have a thing where, like, I wake up and I'm like, oh, the world is different. And, like, then I get up and have to, like, you know, do this thing to wake myself up or whatever. But I mm-hmm. have had moments where, like, in my mind, in order to get up and, like, turn off the alarm, I can't just wake up and press stop. I have to, like, do something ridiculous, like, whether it be... like you're listening to it and you have to like determine the rhythm of the pattern and be able to like Rubik's cube your way out of it. Or like, I remember like having moments thinking that I needed to do some sort of like mathematical equations to get out.
Oh so, man, like, I'd be in bed forever.
Yeah. That happens a lot to me. And especially when we were living in, on Pete Ellis, like that. Yeah. Embrace Side Drive or whatever. Like so that happened to you all the time.
Are you still like asleep when that happens? Yeah. Or are you? That's weird.
It must be like a sort of like in like a waking sleep though, because I'm yeah. awake enough to know my alarm is going off, but I'm not awake enough to know that it's an alarm per se.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like this strange thing. I guess there's yeah. also been times when like alarms have been incorporated into your dream. Like, I don't know if that happens yeah. to you, but then I'm like, why is this music playing continuously? Which is what you're wondering like in life. But
the same 15 seconds of a song playing on repeat.
Yeah. Dreams are some weird shit. I don't know.
They are. Like, I don't like it when that happens to me. Like, it's not something... Like, the first couple of times, it was kind of cool. Because it's sort of like... It's sort of like a lucid dream. Like, yeah. I knew I was asleep. But it's just getting... Like, I don't feel rested when I finally actually wake up
right.
because it's been 15 or 20 minutes of me trying to wake back up. And it only happens if I wake up,
uh-huh.
like, to my alarm or if Subi wakes me up and then I go back to sleep afterwards.
Gotcha.
It's the only time that's ever happened. So I just need to stop doing that.
I guess so, yeah. It's tough, though. I always go back to sleep. I'm like, no, another 5 minutes.
I know.
And then I feel like shit the next time.
And then, like, I'm not having a lot of work currently for my job, so I'm like, well, I don't have to get up at this point. There's no real motivation for it.
Yeah.
So then I end up just going back to sleep and then regretting it because I felt so much more rested the first time when I woke up before I had to wake up 5 or 10 more times.
Exactly.
But yeah, so that's my weird dreaming experience.
Yeah, that is strange. Cool. This is my segue. Cool. So speaking of dreams, this brings us to something that has nothing to do with dreams, which is season 2, episode 21. So close to the end of season 2.
We of are The almost Office. There.
Almost. It's called Conflict Resolution. Originally aired on May 4th, I think it was, 2006. So we are working our way right through to 2006. We'll be graduating high school in no time. And
excellent. I can't wait to get out of here.
Right? Yeah, so Conflict Resolution. This is another episode that starts like immediately with an introduction to what the basically main conflict is of the show, I would say, which is between...
It's not really a cold open, in my opinion. I feel like a cold open is only something that, like, it doesn't pertain to the rest of the episode. Otherwise, it's just an opening. It's not a cold open.
Right, exactly.
Am I right about that? Like, that's how I
think that's right, because, like, I'm thinking back to, like, Friends cold opens, and I feel like a lot of those were not related at all.
Yeah, I think that Friends kind of became famous, or maybe even started the tradition of having cold opens where the opening scene is just kind of a time to do something funny and silly that doesn't really pertain to anything else, something that would never fit into a full length episode as a scene. It's just like a little something the writers found funny, but it didn't go any longer than 30 seconds kind of thing.
Right. And that was always my assumption with these two. And so I guess, yeah, technically what we have today is maybe just an opening, a warm open, if you will.
It is not cold. It is hot. Hot with conflict.
Hot with conflict. And of course, the conflict that's going on here is all about Pam's wedding stuff going on. So she's still trying to pretend she's going to marry Roy.
And I think in her mind at this point, she's not actually pretending. She's like still just believing it.
I guess. But even later in this episode, it's clear that she doesn't really do anything couple-wise.
I know. With Roy. Like even just like when Jim's like, oh, like you don't talk to him about your thoughts and feelings. And she's like, no.
Right. And she does not miss a beat. She's like, right. And I'm like, what? And Jim's just kind of like looking there awkwardly like, oh yeah, well, we both know this is true. Obviously, that'll lead us into the next episode, which is which is juicy, but
it's juicy.
It's juicy, as juicy as Kevin's chili as it seeps into the floor.
Oh my gosh! Can I say something that's not related to this episode, but is related to Kevin's chili?
Did you make chili?
No, I saw online a bumper sticker that's just a silhouette of Kevin, like, mid-fall with his chili, like, falling out of the pan.
Oh my god, I love that. That's just, are there any words?
No, it's just a silhouette, like, and you can tell that it's Kevin, like, if you're an Office fan, like, it would be immediately obvious that it's Kevin God. And, you know, what's happening in it. But, and, like, the chili is just, like, halfway out of the pan, tumbling towards the ground.
That sounds like the best bumper sticker I've ever had.
I can't remember if it was a bumper sticker or a magnet, but I feel like it was a bumper sticker.
Oh, if
it's a magnet?
Oh. If there's a magnet of that, that would be awesome.
Well, I might have to look this up again then. Christmas is right around the corner.
It is. It's true. Like, that is a cold open.
Okay, that's...
For sure.
Yeah, that was my only thought, my only comment on Kevin's chili.
I can't remember when that happens. Like, do you remember what season that's in?
No, I don't. I feel like it's not for a few more seasons, though.
Yeah. We'll be all very
excited.
It's more
like once Kevin's character is slightly more developed and you actually, like, feel intense emotions about his chili because of that.
Right. I feel like Kevin gets some really good ones. Like, he has that one. He has, like, the turtle opening.
The turtle? Oh, my God. And the turtle is not just an opening. It goes through the whole episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like the B plot in that episode, Kevin's turtle.
Oh, my goodness, Kevin. But anyway. So we have Pam talking about her wedding at the beginning.
Yes, her wedding.
So Kevin's like asking if they have a wedding band yet, which apparently, even though Roy said that Kevin wasn't the band, was the band that he was going to choose, Pam must have vetoed that decision for now.
Clearly, must be.
Yeah.
Do you remember what the band name is for Kevin's band?
It's not Scrantonicity, is it? Two?
It is! We were trying to remember it earlier and we had to look it up. So we thought it was Kevin and the Malones. And I'm like, I think his name is just Kevin Malone.
Yeah. Is there a moment? Doesn't it change to like Scrantonicity 2 or something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, Kevin still wants to get a gig, which is fair. And we find out that everyone's getting their save the dates except Angela.
And apparently some other people in the office as well.
Yeah, some probably like Kelly and Ryan and those guys.
And Michael. I feel like Michael's not invited to the
And probably Creed. Or at least not after the comment he makes later. Or the
That's true. She withdraws that save the date.
Yeah. Which I mean, that's gotta be a tough thing. Like if you work with people like that closely all the time. I feel like you'd almost be obligated. And you both
work for the same company.
Right. Like, you're just not going to invite people?
I hate the whole concept of weddings. Like, that's an overstatement. I hate the whole idea that, like, there's so much pressure to invite so many specific people to your wedding.
Or like a third cousin. If you're
going to invite this person, you have to invite that person.
Right.
And you have to invite this person. And it's like, it's your fucking wedding. There should be only people there that you want to see on your wedding day and nobody else. that should just be the extent of it.
Right, and I think that's totally fair. Like, that's how it should be. It's your wedding.
Exactly.
As long as I'm there to officiate, it's fine.
You will be there to officiate.
Ooh, unless I'm a best... wait.
You'll be my maid of honor.
Yes.
And my officiant.
I think we know who your maid of honor will be. Don't you have to be... doesn't Colleen have to be yours?
Well, she doesn't have to be there. See, that's another tradition that I don't have to follow. But yes, that, as of right now, that would be my plan. Would be to ask her. Unless we have some dramatic falling out between now and then, which I don't foresee happening because I hardly ever get to see her anymore.
Yeah, I should hope that doesn't happen. But anyway.
But you could be a bridesmaid if you don't want to officiate.
I'll do either or. Whatever you feel. If you want to have a priestess do yours as well, that's cool. Anyway, we're really on a tangent.
I'm not even engaged. Let's continue.
So, like, the things that are then happening. So that continues to be, I guess, like, throughout the show, the whole, like, Angela, Pam wedding announcement thing is a thing. But...
Oh, yes. And also... Michael just drags up every other small issue that anyone in the office ever had with somebody else in the office.
I know. It's so embarrassing. So there's basically like two things going on. There's the conflict resolution, and then I guess the B plot would be like photo IDs. I don't know what that was about. But they're just like random clips.
I think it probably is like a throwback to Dwight being given a little bit of power over that branch's security from a few episodes ago when Michael kind of, what position does he give him? Like assistant security supervisor for Grand Branch or something like that. So I think, because it was Dwight's idea to do photo IDs. Yeah. So I think that's kind of why that happened.
Oh, good catch. I did not even catch that.
I didn't even think of it until right now as I was saying it.
Nice. Yeah, because at the beginning, he's like, security's really been lacking around here. And he talks about his potato gun. And
they only have, two traffic cones, so.
Right. Dude, it's sad when one of your employees has more traffic cones than your place of employment.
So I think that's probably why that happened. Although, I don't think that there is a single other episode in the entire series where you see them wearing those ID cards.
No.
It's only this one. They have them pinned to their shirt at the end for the photo, but they don't ever wear them again.
And that's kind of problematic for the conflict resolution, in quotes, of Angela and Oscar. Because Yeah. Well, I guess we can talk about the conflict.
So, between Angela and Oscar.
Yeah, so the conflict resolution thing starts, basically, we have Oscar's yelling, basically, in the conference room.
And he gets super interested in it, in, like, that way that Michael does with yes, things.
Yes, Michael's like, ooh, yelling. And he's over. And then Oscar's complaining about, then, the poster, which I thought was very cool that they did a callback from the Christmas episode to that poster with the two babies playing saxophone or whatever.
Okay, who gave her that for Christmas? Because I don't think I wasn't on for that episode.
Oh, goodness. I don't remember.
Because I thought I remembered Oscar giving Angela that poster. Does he give her, like, another baby poster in a later season for Christmas?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm really curious now. Let me look up real quick who gave.
Hold on. Toby got Angela in that episode.
Okay.
Okay.
That makes sense.
And then he says, I got Angela. She's into these posters of babies dressed as adults. I got her one of those. I kind of feel weird about buying that.
Oh my God, I love that. Okay, so he can understand Oscar's conflict in this moment.
So Oscar is mad and he's venting to Toby, who actually bought Angela the poster for Christmas that he's upset about. So that's a weird triangle.
Yeah, that's an awkward situation.
That's actually better than Oscar having bought it for her.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, so he's in the conference room figuring it out. And then basically, I like that Toby's kind of like trying to explain how it goes with Michael, because he's like, you know, I usually just let them rant about it, and then I don't do anything about it. Which, I mean, clearly he actually is, like, writing down their conflicts. Right,
he's paying attention. And, like, that's a good way for an HR representative to deal with a conflict in the workplace. If somebody only comes to you once and is upset about an issue and just needs to vent about it for 5 or 10 minutes, and then they get over it and move on, that's fine. Like, you don't need to pursue it anymore, you know, just put it in a file and move on with life. And then if it does become an issue, you have a record of it. But
right, exactly.
Like, Toby's doing a good job with what he's doing.
Yeah, I would agree. I thought that he approached it the right way. But then, of course, it goes into chaos.
Then, of course, Michael gets involved, and, like, everything he gets involved with, it goes downhill fast.
Right. It's just as bad as him, like, knocking over the warehouse shelves. So cringe. So, I mean, Michael, I will give it to Michael. So, like, after this happens, Michael takes over the conflict resolution, basically, and he has his handy book, and he calls in Oscar and Angela and Pam. For some reason.
Because Pam has to be there to take notes or something.
Right. She probably didn't have a pad with her again. A notepad.
Like, she never does.
Right. But I think that the conflict resolution thing that he chooses, which is that Oscar has to make a t-shirt of it, of the poster, so that he never has to see it, but that Angela can see it, is kind of a good call. It's ridiculous. But, like,
you think that's a good call?
I think of all of the Michael ideas, like, that one is one of the more acceptable.
Okay, I'll say. Maybe. I mean,
like, the obviously, way that they it's make, not going to work. But
like, where they just, like, cut a head hole in the poster and drape it over him like a bib didn't quite work out. But
yeah.
I mean, do you feel like there's any way that could have been resolved? Like, if this was actually an issue in a workplace where somebody had up a poster that you didn't like, the options are either to leave the poster up or take it down. So, like, there is no win-win. I can't think of a situation where it would work out.
Yeah, I think the issue, though, is that if I remember correctly, and I can't remember if it's this poster or her next baby poster, but there's one that's, like, right behind her on the cabinets or whatever. And that Oscar would see all the time. But if she...
Well, I think that's what this one is, like, kind of just based on the angle for where they walk up to it.
Okay.
Like, it kind of looks like it's like that.
But if they took that, or if she had, like, a smaller version, she could totally put it on the divider between hers and Kevin's desk, and she would be the only one seeing it.
So yeah, I think that would make more sense.
That could be a resolution, but... Yeah, if you or she could,
like, shrink
poster.
It down and put it in, like, an 8x10 frame on her desk or something.
Right, yeah, facing away from Oscar.
Like, right.
Yeah, I think that's totally doable. having Oscar put it on his chest and take a photo ID is probably not the best solution, but
probably not. Now he has to see it every time he looks at his photo ID for the rest of the episode where they have them.
But right. But presumably that's also going to be like cropped out of the photo.
Yeah, it's basically just from like the chest, you know, like the neck like the area, neck up, up.
Right?
So like a passport photo.
I mean, I get it that they were trying to do that to be funny and be like, we found the solution. He's not going to have a t-shirt, but he's going to have to wear this, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be cropped out. Like maybe you'll see a saxophone or something. I don't know. But anyway, that whole thing is kind of funny. But I do like
Yeah,
when they're trying to make it a win-win situation. I love that Pam has to keep adding the win in.
And what is the difference between win-win and win-win-win? Like, when could you have a win-win situation where the mediator doesn't also win? Like,
I don't know.
Punch the mediator in the face afterwards or something?
Maybe.
That didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, that's why I think even Michael, he was confused. They're like, just get to the fifth one. What is that, win-win? He's like, no, that's actually number four. Like, even he's surprised that there's a win-win-win.
Win-win-win. Where everyone wins.
I love also that, like, Pam tries to do something that's very responsible. She's like, Tuesdays and Thursdays, Angela, you can have it up. And then the rest of the days, you'll take it down. Oscar won't have to look at it. And
now that's a compromise.
Right. And I like how there's nothing wrong with compromises, though.
I know.
You know?
But Michael, it has to be that win-win-win.
Right.
He won't settle for any other solution.
He's like, that is strategy three, and it is not ideal.
It is not ideal. Sometimes compromising is very ideal.
Right. Oh, my goodness, Michael.
Although, can we just jump back for like 1 second to the poster location?
Yes.
If it is on the wall behind Angela, she doesn't really get to look at it all that much.
That's true.
Like, it's really just up for Oscar.
I mean, that's probably what he's thinking. He's like, she's not even looking at it. This is terrible. Yeah. That is a bit silly.
That just occurred to me.
Yeah, the best I think would be to like shrink it down and somehow have it on her own desk space.
On her desk. Or if there was room on the divide further down where only she could see it, that would also work. Sorry about that jump backwards there for a second.
It's all good. Very logical. So Michael kind of goes out of control then. Go ahead. Do you remember what?
No, I was just reading some of the notes on Subi's page. And he just has written down, I've always wanted a laminating machine.
Who hasn't?
I mean, exactly. Who doesn't want a laminating machine?
That'd be awesome. That whole lamination scene is amazing, though. With with Dwight's ID.
With Dwight's card, yeah. Like, how does Jim even get security threat on his badge? I don't understand how that happened. I'm not very familiar with the ins and outs of laminating machines.
Oh, okay. Well, I think I can explain this. So okay. Lamination basically, like, so the card must have been just like printed out, and then the lamination machine is basically just like pressing plastic over it. So like you could, it's like two sheets of plastic that are then like somehow sealed around the thing that you're laminating.
Okay.
And so he probably just like slipped a little bit of plastic on there, or he printed out security.
A little note.
Yeah. And put it on there.
That makes sense, I guess.
That's what I would think that he did. And then also put Dwight Fartshirt.
Anyways, so after the whole incident with Angela and Oscar is quote unquote resolved,
yes.
Michael decides to dive into everyone else's personal conflicts with other people in the office. So that leads us to basically, I just want to talk about Creed and his conflict with Ryan.
Okay.
Is it with Ryan?
With Ryan.
Where is it? Because he smells like an old man.
Oh, yeah.
Creed just kills it in this episode. Like, every scene that he's in, he has the whole turning to his side,
yes.
The mug shot. He's got the talking about sprouting mung beans on a paper towel in his desk drawer that smell like death. Like, I love Creed so much in this episode.
I know, I love
That's really all I wanted to get to talk about. Let's just talk about Creed for the rest of this podcast.
I know.
And how much he's my, like, second favorite person on The Office.
I do love it. Like, he's so... Yeah, because, like, immediately he's like, oh, I totally know what he means. Yeah, they taste delicious.
He has smell a distinctive like old man smell.
I love it. Because, of course, like, of course Creed would have some, like, nasty stinking thing at his desk.
It's weird to me that it's also something, like, nutritious that he has in his desk. Because he doesn't really strike me as the type to, like, be super into health.
Yeah, that's fair.
But, I do enjoy knowing that about Creed.
Oh, Creed. Yeah, Creed. So that's one of the conflicts. They're basically a whole list of different conflicts that go on. Like,
everybody has an issue with somebody else, except for Angela, who doesn't have an issue with Dwight as of 6 months ago.
Yeah. A lot of things were retracted and...
retracted? Curious. Redacted?
So apparently, according to one of the sites I was looking at, you would say retracted in those words, in those meanings, if you're, like, taking stuff out. Whereas, like, redacted means, like, edited.
I thought they said redacted on the episode,
They
though.
Did.
Okay.
But I think it's meant to be retracted. Someone in the comments, let us know.
Yes, please comment on this and tell us your thoughts on redacted versus retracted.
Or
we would love to hear them.
Or send us a tweet at TL_PCast.
Or email us at whatever our email address is.
Exactly.
Y'all know it by now.
So what were the other? What were some of the other good conflicts?
Phyllis has an issue with Angela not letting her be part of the party planning committee, like being too controlling in the party planning committee or something.
Oh, wait, and giving her bad looks.
Giving her bad looks, yeah. And she's got an issue with Stanley, too, but I don't remember what that was.
It was the other way around. Stanley, Phyllis apparently cries often, and it annoys Stanley or something like that.
Oh. Okay, yes.
One of the best things, though, is Kevin, like when Michael tries to resolve Kevin and Angela's problem.
Oh my god.
Like, Kevin was making apparently sexually suggestive remarks, and I love that Michael's just like, my solution.
Angela, you make sexually suggestive marks at Kevin. And he's like, okay.
I accept that. And she's just like, Angela looks so defeated by the end of this episode. I feel so bad for her. Because, like, granted, she has, like, said things about everyone. That's kind of, like, just her personality. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. She even said things about Dwight, but you don't find out what those are.
Right. It'd be interesting to know.
Just like the annoying things that Dwight does on a daily basis that would have irritated Angela before she started boinking him.
Boinking. I find it strange also that when he says that they were all like redacted 6 months ago, immediately Dwight's like, if someone has a problem with me, I'd like to know it. But like you would think he would realize how long he's been dating Angela.
Well, maybe they've been dating for longer than that, and she just didn't take it seriously until 6 months ago, you know? Maybe they've been dating for 9 months, but it took her 3 months to go in and actually redact all of them.
Maybe. But I think I would feel like he's smart enough in some... Well, sometimes he's really smart.
He's also not very smart in, like, relationships, and this is kind of like a relationship-esque thing.
That's true. So maybe that was the case.
I do enjoy... Dwight's box,
yes.
The permanent file of pranks that Jim played on him, and hearing them all like listed off at the end is kind of fun too.
I love it. Even though like I love at the end though that Jim's kind of like, yeah, maybe all those one after the other like don't sound that great.
What was your favorite one, like of the ones that were listed there?
I really like the telephone one.
Me too. I love when Michael reads off that one because he's reading them all off and it's all like, Jim did this, Jim did that. And then he's like, I hit myself in the face with the telephone receiver today. And Michael's just like, what?
I know. He's like, this doesn't even talk about Jim.
So I love that Dwight just assumed that Jim had something to do with that.
Right. And of course he did. But
of course.
I did also really like the bloody glove. Try to convince me that I committed murder.
I think that he is the actual murderer.
I feel like Subi would have enjoyed that.
He wrote down Jim as a psychopath as a comment for that.
Yeah, sounds about right. Have you ever done these sort of like pranks on people?
I mean, when Weston and I were young, for listeners, Weston is my brother. We did stupid things to each other, but we were really never like pranksters. I remember, like, not to go off on too much of a pranking tangent, but one of my friends was over spending the night, and we decided it would be really funny to cut up like 50 sheets of paper into tiny little confetti bites and run into Weston's room and just throw them all
on him and
run away. And he got mad, of course, and then my mom made us go in and clean up all the little pieces of paper off his floor.
By hand?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Payback.
Did you do any pranksting when you were young?
Not that I remember. My brother and I never really got along, but it'd be more like he'd punch me in the face, and then that was the
that kind of pranking.
Yeah, I guess that's brotherly love.
Is that what they say? Wes never punched me in the face.
No, he just stabbed your friend.
He looked like he would have liked. Yeah, he did stab my friend with a sword once, but that was accidental.
And with a sword.
It was with a sword, but it was an accident. It wasn't malicious. Although she was a kind of an annoying friend, so.
Yeah.
Maybe it was intentional.
Maybe. Oh my goodness. We'll pretend that it wasn't. But
it's for the best.
I do also like that Jim actually like was able to pay people. Like, he convinced people with $5 to call him Dwayne all day. I find that hilarious.
I feel like I would have needed more money than $5 to do it all day long.
I feel like people would just be like, are you kidding? That's not gonna happen.
Yeah, because like it doesn't really seem like everyone else in the office is into pranking Dwight. Like, I can see Pam going along with it, and
for sure.
Maybe Michael too, because if like it was explained to him by Jim, he would do anything Jim asked him to do.
True,
but I don't know. No one else. Like, I can't really picture anyone else wanting to deal with that.
Yeah, we did. Like, speaking back about Creed, we forgot to mention his one complaint about the restroom.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was one of the, wasn't that one of the redacted ones or something? Because Michael didn't know who said it. He assumed Stanley had said that it was the whites only bathroom.
Right.
And Stanley's like, I did not say that.
Yeah.
And Creed's like, why is there a white man on the door?
And then Michael just looks at it and it zooms in at the white thing. And
yeah.
I mean, true story.
I mean, way to be looking out for people, Creed. But
yeah. See, Creed, he's a good guy. He just wants to stop staring at the redhead and look at Pam.
Maybe Creed doesn't realize that he's white.
Maybe not. Maybe he's in a constant stupor and he doesn't know.
Pretty much. The other important message that was redacted is that somebody complained about Pam planning her wedding too much at the office. Why can't she just do it at home? And this is like right after Pam had kind of like stepped up to sidestep the whole Dwight finding out that Angela had made all these complaints about her. And so she steps up and saves Angela from that. And then she assumes incorrectly that Angela is the one who actually had made that complaint. We find out later that it was not.
Yes.
But then there's like this whole tension between her and Angela for most of the rest of the episode, where she's like, well, I gave her a save the date, I should take it back now because she complained about that, blah, blah, blah.
Right, and she's thinking about, like, spilling the beans on her secret and, like, doing all this stuff.
On Bobblehead Joe.
On Bobblehead Joe. And that lasts right up until, like, the last...
The very last scene when they're having the picture taken there, she's just about to, like, in the most awkward situation possible, in the middle of a group photo, she's gonna like confront Angela about having made that comment, and Jim's like, no, don't do it, it wasn't her, I'm the one who made that comment.
Right.
And then like, Subi and I were talking about this, and Pam hates to be like confronted with situations where it's almost inescapably obvious that Jim likes her. Like, that's what I think she dislikes most about this situation. It's not that he complained about it. It's that, like, why else would he complain about it?
Right.
Other than he has feelings for her and the whole wedding just upsets him, you know? And that's what I think is her, the whole hardest part for her in that situation is like, she, there's no other reason that Jim would have done it. And it's just one of those moments, like in the episode where he can't speak and they have that awkward eye contact.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't like to be presented with things because she just likes to live in denial that her and Jim are just friends and she's going to marry Roy and live happily ever after with a man she can't talk about her feelings with.
Right. And it's absolutely that. And it's, of course, like the idea that she knows that she also likes Jim, but she can't express that because she is engaged and blah, blah,
right.
Blah. Yeah, it's a whole mess.
Well, she's married to a, or engaged to a douchebag, so.
She is definitely engaged to a douchebag.
She did bring a lot of this on herself.
True story. But in the end, though, this kind of like sets us up for the, basically for season three, because Jim at some point, when Dwight and Jim were still having a conflict together.
Yeah, it's like right after Dwight finds out that the box was never actually sent to corporate. And right. Then he's like, I can't work with Jim anymore. Michael, you have to make a decision. Me or Jim, one of us is leaving at the end of the day kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so, then Dwight finds an advertisement for a sales manager position at the other, where is it? Stanford branch?
Stanford, yeah.
Stanford branch. And yeah, that does set us up for season three. Spoiler alerts.
Spoiler alert, because the last thing we see is Jim. Not last thing, but one of the last thing. No, it was the last thing. I actually can't remember what the last scene is. But we see Jim going into corporate and talking to Jan with her lapels.
And that is the last scene. He leaves Pam the voicemail in the morning saying he has a doctor's appointment in the city, so he wouldn't be until midday. But he's actually going in for the interview. And, like, it surprises me that he's thinking about it seriously enough at that point. Like, I wouldn't have thought he'd really be considering it until after the end of the next episode, you know?
Well, you know what it is that he had another conflict with Pam. So, like,
yeah.
Every time he has a conflict with Pam, he makes a rash decision.
That's
like
true.
Whether it's sending an email to Brenda or whatever her name was, or like starting to date what's her face. I'm forgetting her name.
What her name was and what's her face.
Katie. And so like every time like something happens between him and Pam, he does something ridiculous. So
that is true. And I mean, though this isn't really like a ridiculous move to take a better job at the same company to kind of put distance between yourself and the woman who you're in love with who's engaged to somebody else. Like, that's kind of a good decision.
Yeah, it's completely rational, like, for sure. But it's still kind of like a snap decision that...
Oh,
like,
yeah,
he spent no time thinking about it.
Definitely.
You know?
It was just kind of like he was reacting to the situation.
Yeah. That would be what I would think, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty much...
Well, there's one other shot at the very end of the episode where Michael finally gets the group photo taken after like $300 spent on it.
Oh my God.
And he's like, and it's a good thing that I'm good with Photoshop. Like, in what world does Michael think a digital camera is called a computer camera and is also good at Photoshop? Like, there's no way Michael is good at Photoshop.
No, well, did you see the end product? It's certainly
I mean, he's not even good enough to do that with it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he couldn't... I work in Photoshop. There's no way Michael could have figured out how to do that to Photoshop.
Well, he first apparently never managed to log into his computer before.
Yeah, like...
Because, like, when the guy came to install stuff, he's like, oh, I never got past
the
first
step. Yeah.
Is that your password?
So, like, there's on no planet is Michael good enough to do anything even close to that in Photoshop.
Yeah.
And that's not even well done.
He also mentions in that, like, it's hard to get a group photo of 15 people, and there are only 14 people in the photo.
No. Oh.
So he can't even count.
Nope.
But
yes, that is pretty much the end of the episode then.
Yeah. So there were a couple more conflicts in there, but whatever, it's fine. Nothing
but they
major.
Weren't as funny as the other ones.
Yeah. So did you hear any, there were a couple of gems quote-wise in here. Did you hear any ones that you liked?
I did write down one. It says, Michael saying, in this office, it's until death do us part, assuming we don't get downsized.
Yeah. Another downsizing.
That's the only one I wrote down, though. I literally loved everything that Creed said, but most of it was too long to write down.
Fair.
What about you?
I really liked the when Phyllis goes to take her group or her ID photo, she takes her glasses off. And Dwight's just like, what is in your face? Is that a disguise? Clown paint.
Oh my God. But it was so terrible looking.
Like, it was terrible looking. And I was, but
such overkill.
But then I felt terrible because she like basically ran out to cry probably.
I know. Well, or did, I was just assuming to take it off before the photo.
Or that.
But and then do you remember like a few seasons or next season, some other time in some other season?
Oh yeah.
She goes
yeah.
and gets a makeover with
Karen, right?
Karen, yes, with Karen. I was trying to think of her name in Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
And then she looks so ridiculous in that too.
Right, but then you find that like, yeah, it works perfectly. It's so funny.
Yeah.
I think that's the only quote that I
wrote down.
Yeah. Besides, besides chanting transfer.
I do have a couple of questions. Well, actually, that's not true. I have one question because you already answered one of them.
Oh.
Okay. Which was, what instrument were the babies playing in the poster?
Sax, right?
And you already mentioned it was a saxophone. So my other question is, what product does Dwight order over the internet that Jim has to overhear him ordering?
Oh, it was like deer urine or something.
Deer urine, yeah.
What is the use, what is the function of deer urine?
I mean, like, if you put urine around, like, a garden, it will... keep a, like if you put your own urine like if as a human if you go out and like pee around your garden it'll keep deer away from the garden.
What is that true?
Yeah, yes, I remember as a child my dad like going out and like hosing down the corners of the garden.
Oh my goodness. Your mom doesn't pee around the garden though?
I don't think my mom did it, but he would definitely be out there doing it to keep, because like then it smells like humans and like it deters the deer from going into the garden. I don't know how well it actually worked, but that is a thing that people would try to do. But I don't know what the point of putting deer urine around your garden would be. I feel like it would just attract the deer.
Yeah, that's weird. Interesting. So that was your second question?
Yeah, that was the only one that hadn't been answered.
Okay, I have a couple.
So hopefully you made some easy ones for me, because we know I'm not good with the hard questions.
Some tricky ones?
Some easy ones.
Oh, easy ones. So Michael got his haircut for his ID photo. What was the package of haircut he got?
I remember that it was from Fantastic Sam's.
Yeah.
Is it the master package?
No.
Then I don't know.
He got the adult cut plus.
The adult cut plus.
Shampoo and condition.
I'm lucky. You're lucky I remember the place he went.
No, it's good. Well, we kind of talked about this, but what are the five conflict resolution strategies or whatever?
Well, they never actually discuss all five of them. There's lose-lose,
yep.
Win-lose, compromise, win-win, and win-win-win.
Yes, those are the five, yeah. What day is Pam's wedding meant to be on?
Oh, man. Is it November 17th?
No.
Then I don't know.
What date is that? Is that your wedding?
No, I don't know. That was just the first date that popped into my head.
No, it was June 10th.
That makes more sense than in the middle of winter.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to ask you one last difficult question.
Oh, well, could you make it easy?
Yes, I'll have an easy component and a difficult component.
Okay.
So Dwight, we know that Dwight's complaints for Jim are all in a box under Toby's desk.
Yes.
Where are all of the complaints to Michael?
Michael has his own drawer full of folders. Yes.
And my question was going to be, what number is on the drawer?
Oh, jeez, I don't know. I thought you were going to ask what the folder that Toby pulls out, what month range is that? And I think it's just like January to March of that year or something.
Yeah, it's like...
But I don't...
It's only like a couple months. No, it's like number 48531. Yeah, I'll stop.
So
now.
Do we assume that at the very end of the episode when Tony or Toby is filing that away in that box, like are all those boxes on that pan out scene... Complaints?
Meant to be from, like, complaints about Jim?
Yeah.
I think so, and that was a very clever shot for, it's meant to look like Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, I did not get that reference.
And I think there's also a scene like that in, I want to say X-Files or something, isn't there?
Where like they close
a folder and there's like a billion more.
I
can't remember.
I didn't really watch that much of the X-Files.
I thought you watched the whole thing.
I only watched up to where that you need to watch that movie to continue, and then we never found the movie, so I never finished watching it.
Oh, that's right. Womp womp. Do you, out of this episode, have a Dundee you'd like to give to someone?
I do. I would like to give the smelly old man Dundee to Creed.
Aw, Creed, for all of his silliness in this episode.
Yep.
That's a fair one. This is so tough.
Oh, you don't have it prepared? I always prepare my Dundees.
I never could prepare mine. I think I am going to give mine to I'm gonna give mine to Toby. For the pure fact that, like, once again his job was taken over by Michael. So he has to put up with not even be able to do his own job.
Doing a job that he was doing a good job at to begin with.
Right.
And
like, it was perfect.
Then having it ruined by Michael.
Yep.
And his awful ways.
Yep. So
what did you rate this episode?
Overall, like, I like this episode. I'm gonna say I would give this 4.
Whoa.
Adult cut plus haircuts out of 5. I thought it was it's a fairly memorable episode. It has some nice conflict in it. we see Dwight acting kind of crazy sometimes. You have some cute Creed moments. You get a nice little memory, like reminder of all of the different pranks Jim has done. Yeah.
See, I like that aspect of it, but I hate everything that Michael does in this episode so much. And he's in this episode doing things that I hate so much that it really brought the overall score down for me to 2.5 out of 5 mung beans. I did not care for anything Michael-esque in this show. And he's been about 50% of it, so he knocked off 50% of my score.
Yikes.
So in typical Justin fashion, our total score for the episode is a 3.25 adult mung beans.
Which is what exactly what was in the drawer. Let's be frank.
Yes, that's how many adult mung beans there should be.
Very good.
And so that kind of brings us to the end of the office portion of our podcast. So if you don't want to stick around for what comes next, get out of here.
Get out.
Send us an email at our email address.
ThrillerLittlePodcast@gmail.com.
There we go. And if you are interested in our thoughts on the rest of the world, stick around for Threat Level Podcast After Dark.
After Dark. I actually can't see the window, but I assume it's dark out.
It is dark out here indeed.
So what have you been listening to, watching, reading? What are you checking out this week, Mads?
My shout out this week, it actually goes to a book that I read about a month ago, but I was not doing as many podcasts back then to shout things out for it. It's called The Nightingale, and it's by Kristen Hannah. And it's not a typical book that I, like, if I hadn't really known much about it, I feel like it's not a normal book that I would have picked up to read. Quick overview of the plot is it takes place in France during World War II, and it starts before the Nazi occupation of France and kind of goes up through to the end of the war. Cool. And it's told from the viewpoint of two different sisters. It switches back and forth between their viewpoints during the war. And it is fiction. It's not an actual, like, account that happened, but everything that happens in it are events that happened to people during the war. So they're not, like, fabrications of, you know, extreme circumstances. They are things that happened to a lot of people during the war. They're just using these two characters to kind of show. And, like, and I, before reading this book, I had no idea to like what extent the occupation, like the Nazi occupation of France, had on France. Like, because like that's nothing when you're learning about the Holocaust that the history books really ever focus on, at least not in our country, is how devastating it was to France. And right. So that aspect of it was really interesting to me. Yeah, and the story is just, it's so captivating and it's so sad and it's so amazing all at the same time. Like, I literally, it's a 500 and some page book. Whoa. And I read it in like 3 or 4 days. Like, I just nice. Could not put it down. Highly, highly recommend it. It's called The Nightingale. Just
and again. Who's the author?
Kristen Hanna. Yes. Very, very highly recommend it.
Very cool. I for a second thought it was the book that I've been hearing about. This summer, people were talking all about a book they were reading about. I want to say it was during the Second World War, and also about France, but I don't think it was called The Nightingale. Mm. Probably a bunch of them, right?
There might be. Now, this one is, it's supposedly it's being made into a movie as well.
Oh.
I don't think it has been yet, though.
Okay, cool. Well, hopefully it'll be a good film if it's made into one. Ugh.
Yeah, and it's such a long story. Like, so much happens in it to both of the sisters.
Yeah,
I don't really feel like it would be hard to do the book justice.
Is it written in like the point of view of the sisters?
Yes, it switches back and forth between the two of them, like every couple of chapters or so. Sometimes even mid chapter, it'll switch back and forth because they're not like through most of the book, they're not in the same location. They're in different parts of France. Sure. And there's just like a couple of times where they're like together, but for the most part, they're in different locations doing different things.
Okay.
And there's actually, like, it actually switches back and forth between three points of view because the book starts and then every once in a while it goes back to one of the sisters, and I won't tell you which one,
okay.
But one of the sisters as an old woman. Like, the book opens as an old woman and you do not realize which one of the sisters it is until the very end of the book, because everything the old woman says could apply to both sisters. And I had my theory and I was wrong.
Oh,
and
no.
and it's like, it's kind of crushing when you find out who it actually is. But it's so good.
Cool. One day when I have reading time, I shall check it out.
You definitely should.
So something I do have time for is listening to podcasts, because I do that while everything else. A podcast that I discovered recently is called Weird Work. And it's cool because it's a guy whose name I can't remember, although he always says bad things about Ira Glass. But he basically talks to a person each episode who does a sort of strange job. So the first one, the first full episode that they had was a discussion between him and this guy who writes dinosaur and monster erotica.
What?
And so he's talking kind of about like how people react to that when he tells them, and like what it's like how long it takes him to write these stories and all this stuff. Another one was about a woman who makes those ASMR videos. There was one about someone who's a professional bridesmaid. So yeah, it's been a pretty interesting podcast. There are only a few I think there are only 4 episodes out or so. So
okay.
Easy to catch up on. I think the episodes run around 30 minutes long. So it's pretty
short. Is it another one of your British podcasts?
No, I think he's an American. So
okay.
Rare, right? But
you said it was called Weird Work?
Weird Work, yeah.
All right.
So that, yeah.
I have to check that out.
Available on iTunes, at least.
Okay.
But yeah, so I would check that out.
All right. Well, I think that brings us to the official end of this episode.
It does. So next time we will be back and talking about the season finale of season 2.
And hopefully it will be more than just the two of us for the season finale.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Here's to hoping.
So yeah, thanks for listening. Check us out again on Twitter, TL_PCast. Hit us up. On an email. That's not what people say, but that's fine. Hit us up on an email. ThreatLevelPodcast@gmail.com. No spaces or hyphens, I don't think.
I don't think any email addresses have spaces.
Yeah, that's true. No underscores or anything like that. And we will catch you next time. So
Bye. Bye.